Hello and welcome to the Operation Move podcast. I'm Katie.
And I'm Zoe, and we are back to talk more about fueling on the run.
Yay.
Yay! Which
Yay.
we'll probably can talk a little bit about. I ran Southwest Rocks Marathon on the weekend, and I had a very vivid example of what happens when you don't eat enough on a run, and that kind of thing. But how's your week been?
It has been quite good. We are kind of trudging along to the end of term at this point. Our term is quite a long one because our holidays in Victoria seem to be out of sync with the whole rest of the country this year. So we're kind of in week 10 of a w 11-week term, and my children are tired. I don't think I've not had one home most days for the last week or so, just with, the winter lurgies and stuff, which is, it's kind of nice actually. I'm enjoying having some one-on-one time with them, and I think we're all looking forward to a break very soon. How
Yeah,
about you?
oh, Josh said to me the other day, he's like, "Oh, only a few more weeks until end of term." I'm like, "Wait, what? Where did it go?" I just sort of get into my routine and then I completely forget that they do actually have school holidays coming up. But yeah, good. Like, as anyone who follows the Facebook page knows and knows about my propensity for whinging, I was sick all week. And then managed to kind of be well enough to go down and do the marathon on the Sunday. And after that, I was fine. My concern with going down there not being 100% was that I could run it and then it could put me in the hole even more, and then it could take a couple of weeks to recover. But I was coming good by the Sunday, so I ran it, and afterwards I was fine, and now I feel pretty much back to normal, so that's nice.
Oh, phew, for that. That was a horrible week for you.
Yeah, it's just, I find all those interruptions very pesky.
Yeah,
And
frustrating.
you kind of have that, I guess, too, with any taper. You are running a lot less, but you get like a little bit of confidence from the sessions that you do, and just doing nothing. I just had no, like, I could have gone out like on Friday or something for, like a quick 15-minute run to see how I was feeling, but I didn't even want to waste that amount of energy on it. I'm like, no, I'll save it all for Sunday because I'm going to need it.
And you did need it.
I did need it. So yeah, but it's beautiful down there, and it was really great community atmosphere. There were lots of kids out there waiting to be high-fived as you're going past. And
Oh, that's my favorite thing.
towards the end, when I was walking, there was a whole group of kids like watching from a balcony on their house across the road, and they kept telling me to keep running. So it was very motivating. It was very fun.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
So yes, so it's sort of hard to know where to start with fueling. I mean, I guess you could probably, the most co common question is why you need to eat, because a lot of people go, "Well, I've got loads of fat, I will just burn that, and wouldn't that be wonderful if that was the
And wouldn't that be wonderful?
case?" But the problem with fat as a fuel source for energy is that it takes a lot longer for your body to turn that fat into energy. So by the time your body needs energy, it takes too long for it to use the fat, basically. So, you
And
can.
even if we could like step back from that a tiny bit too, because something that has come up a few times in various Learn to Run groups I noticed is when women are starting to run, there's a question around, should I even be eating at this stage, or is it just for long runs, and how does that kind of tie in? Because I know a lot of our people who come to Learn to Run do it within the back of their minds thinking they'd like to be losing some fat, and that's part of their thinking around it. So the kind of the thinking around nutrition and tying that in with runs begins right at the very start for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is that the better you are with the nutrition, the more you'll get out of the run, and the more likely you are to be kind of in a space where you're going to be, burning fat and not burning muscle. which is exactly what you don't want to do. So the, for your metabolism, it is really, really, really important that you be eating appropriately and not treat your runs as some kind of, like calorie expenditure activity. So for it's such a personal thing though. Like I pretty much since I started, I really much prefer to run on an empty stomach. Like if I have breakfast and then go for a run, I will tend to get, I get heartburn, I get stitches, I don't feel comfortable. So if I'm gonna eat, if I'm gonna go first thing, I won't worry about it. I might have a cup of coffee, and because I have plenty of milk in that coffee, that's actually a decent amount of carbohydrate and protein in that coffee for me in the morning. So if you're not having, but for other people, like my husband is like, I don't know how you have coffee before you go for a run. That's insane, because he would be like off to the toilet immediately. So if you're not having that, then you might want to look at something like a toast or bagel or crumpet or maybe some cereal. It kind of depends how you go with it. I tend to find that for me, cereal would probably hit, takes longer for my body to digest than toast. So toast would be more my option. But you just have to experiment with what works for you. And so if I was going to eat beforehand, which I do before marathons and stuff like that, I would try to eat, a good couple of hours before, which is why it's then problematic if you're kind of your alarm's going off at 6 o'clock in the morning to go for a run. You're not exactly wanting to get up an hour early to eat something, but if you do need to eat, you just want to find something that is going to be relatively light but is going to have a bit of carbohydrate to get you going.
Yeah, I guess it's, there's no magic bullet, and what works for one person won't work for another. And like I've said previously, like I used to be the same, run on a cup of coffee, and that was fantastic. And then that stopped working so well for me, and I did need something more. And I remember there was a phase when I was in Ballarat and running, and I would quite often, Instagram or tweet that I was having shot blocks for breakfast, which are a very scientifically developed, running fuel, but not the most delicious or nutritious of breakfasts. And when I think about that now, it makes me feel a bit ill, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, and or unfortunately for me, because there's such a good fruit, I don't like the taste of bananas, so I don't have bananas. But if you like bananas, then banana is an excellent option.
Oh, I don't like them either. It's annoying, isn't it, when you
It's
know how
so
great it
annoying
is?
because they're so good. But I have actually found recently too that having just some dried fruit or something like that sits quite well in my stomach, and I can have that fairly close to a
Yeah, and I
run.
think it's a really good chance to kind of experiment that stuff while you are doing those shorter runs, because if you don't get it quite right, if you're doing, say, a 5 or an 8K, it's not going to have the same impact as if you're not getting it right and then going out for 20Ks and feeling
Yeah.
uncomfortable for that extended
And
time.
it's probably more important, like if you break the sessions up into your, I would, when I talk about an easy run, obviously it doesn't always start being easy, but it's the idea of it being at a more comfortable pace where your heart rate would be in a kind of like around 60 to 75% zone, and you're capable of having a conversation, that kind of thing. If that's the session you're going out for, then I find it is less necessary to eat, although some people will still feel a whole lot better out doing their session if they do eat. So it's just a matter of figuring out what works for you.
Yeah,
But
absolutely.
for quality sessions like hill sprints or intervals or, tempo runs, it becomes a lot more important to eat first because you are in a zone where you are going to burn carbohydrates and you're going to burn through your muscles, glycogen stores, and all of that sort of stuff. So you want to have a topped up kind of carbohydrate level before you take that on, and then it's just going to be that much easier to get the most out of the session.
Yep, absolutely. It really is so much practice. And I think particularly if you're targeting an event, if you're training for your first 10K or half marathon or marathon, practicing your fueling is as imperative as the actual getting the kilometres in your legs.
Yeah, also because particularly with the longer distances, like if you're talking about a half marathon or something, it never feels natural to be eating and running at the same time. They don't have a natural marriage. So you've actually got to teach your body how to take on carbohydrates and food during a run and then continuing on running. And so when I was training for, I think it was the Melbourne Marathon, I started at a kind of moderate level of carbohydrates that I would have on my long run, and I slowly increased that to get my body more and more used to taking all of that stuff on. I had, you know, pretty sort of classic mistake in there, which was when I was doing that, I experimented, I think, with a few different fuels in training. Like I sort of did shot blocks, which had worked in the past, and I did gels, but I'd had poor experiences with gels and how my stomach went in the past, and I still use them on the marathon and I paid for it. So that is classic mistake. Don't do anything that you haven't fully tested out in training on a race day. But it is about, those are perfect opportunities for you to test out fueling, because there are a couple of things that are going to, generally speaking, why people try out different things is because often their stomachs will have a poor reaction to a certain thing. So, you know, gels, some of them have caffeine in it. The caffeine might make you need to go to the toilet more so than normal, or, you know, whatever it is, or something might just give you heartburn, or it might just sit in your stomach the wrong way. But a lot of it is about, frankly, is about avoiding going to the toilet.
And none of them are things that you really want to discover on race day. And sometimes these things happen anyway, no matter how good your preparation is. Sometimes that stuff will just happen. But, you know, if you've had some practice and you've tried different things and you're fairly confident in what's going to work for your gut on the day, then, you know, that's all you can do.
Because it's always going to be worse on the day, because GI distress is exacerbated by dehydration and impact. So because you tend to be going faster on race day, it's higher impact, and because you tend to be going faster, you tend to be more dehydrated. So that is why it's quite important when you are having something to eat that you also are making sure that you're keeping up your water levels, so that it doesn't cause you to become dehydrated and make you feel any worse.
And I think it's really good that people maybe think outside the square too. Like, I don't know about anyone else, but as I was training for our first half marathon and starting to build up distance, and I was loving reading Runner's World, and I was reading everything that I could get my hands on, and everything kind of suggested that around, say, the 16 to 20 kilometre distance mark, that's where you needed to start taking on fuel. And all I saw was about gels. I didn't really read much about other options. So I thought, okay, well, that's what I have to do. If I'm running 16 kilometres, I have to have this amount of gels at this amount of Ks. And I really felt like that was a prescriptive thing, with no sense of, actually, I'm an individual. Well, this may not be what my body needs.
Yeah, and most people can't, there are some people who can just have as many gels as they want, but they're pretty disgusting and they're pretty sweet, and they upset a lot of people's stomach because they are so sort of intense. And really, I think that in terms of long runs, the main thing is start early. Eat way, way before you think that you need to eat. You know, it's just because by the time you realize you're depleted, it's too late. You know, and it is hard to come back from that. So generally speaking, if I was doing a training run where I was practicing fueling, I would have my first whatever it was, whether it's a gel or I'm having chomps or shot blocks or jelly beans or dried fruit or whatever it is, I would have the first lot as soon as I walk out the door. And then I would probably do that. I tend to just go off the, like when I hear, I would tend to, if I'm doing that and I've got my pack with me so I can drink water whenever I want, I would probably have a sip of water on the odd kilometers, so like 1, 3, 5, and have the food on the even kilometers. And depending on what kind of food I'm having, I might want to wash that down with water as well. Like certainly with things that are more sort of engineered, like gels or shot blocks or chomps, things like that, or jelly beans even, I would have water with it. Other things, it's not so necessary, but sometimes you do just want to wash that flavor out of your
Yeah.
mouth.
One of the things that I found really valuable too, as I was getting to the business end of training for some of those longer events, was to be aware where the water stations were going to be, at what kilometre breaks the water stations were going to be on course, so that in those last training runs, I was kind of scheduling my fueling around that so that I could mimic as closely as possible what was likely to happen on the day. Because for me, I really do need water to wash down pretty much everything, especially gels. I can't have a gel and not have water.
No.
And so being able to practice that out on the trail beforehand meant that my body wasn't, being stretched longer than it was used to, or vice versa.
Yeah, and I mean, being aware of where the stations are helps too, because you want to be strategic about when you're doing your food on the actual race day, so that if you're having a gel, you can stop and walk, say, 100 meters before where the water station is, have the gel, and then you're at the water station to wash it down with something. Because I'm not a, I know there are people who run and have gels at the same time. I'm not one of those people. I'm like,
I'm
I don't
not.
need to choke on my gel. I'm just going to stop and walk. It'll be fine.
Yeah. And the other advantage I found for me, because running is such a massively psychological thing as well as a physical one, is that I would use fuel as part of my mind games with myself. So, for instance, when we were training for the Sydney Marathon, when we actually ran that, I ran that fueled with those glucogel jelly beans, which I still kind of look at these days and go, oh. But I would have, and I had planned in training and on the day, I had one every 3 kilometres because I could have one of those and not have water. That was okay, one or two. And for me, it was as much about knowing, okay, every 3Ks, anyone can run 3Ks. I get a jelly bean in 3Ks. And that's how I ran that marathon. It was just a series of 3K runs for me. And then every 5Ks, I'd have a gel, and they were tied in with the water stations. But being able to play that kind of mental mind game got me over the line just as much as the fueling did.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely helps to, for me, the struggle town of any marathon is probably around, I would say, sort of 16 to 24, because that's the hump. You're coming at anywhere where I'm coming up to halfway, it's kind of like, oh, halfway, but oh my God, I've still got half to go. And so once I'm over that, and then it's like under, it's 18 to finish, and then it's 16, and then it's 14, and I can wrap my head around that distance. So I remember very distinctly being in quite struggle town in that marathon up until about 25 Ks, and then we got to 30, and then I was good.
Yeah.
When people in with marathon talk about hitting the wall happens when you are so all of your carbohydrate resources are depleted, and it basically means you haven't taken on enough fuel. And you can't, I mean, you can keep going, but you can't, you don't really come back from it, so it's not like, like I got very depleted in the last 10K at Southwest Rocks because I hadn't eaten enough. And I couldn't then at that 32K mark go, okay, well, I'm now gonna have a huge amount of food and then be fine, because it's over then, basically. So all I could do is keep taking on the fuel that was available. I was having Gatorade at all of the stations from the start, because I knew that I hadn't, in part, I hadn't really been training for taking on fuel, and I had just thought I'll just take some jelly beans with me. But then I was just kind of, I guess I was just probably a bit more blasé about it than I should have been. So I was having the Gatorade and having the jelly beans that I had, and I got to 32Ks and it just started to feel like kind of running through quicksand a little bit. And so then you can get through that and adjust. So I just was like, right, I'm keep taking on all my fuel. I'm going to walk for the first 30 seconds of any kilometer, and then I'm going to run the rest of that kilometer. And it was a lot slower, but I finished.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It makes me wonder, when we ran Sydney, I remember waiting for the wall. Like, there were certainly periods that were challenging, but I remember around the 32, 34K mark thinking, oh, there's meant to be a wall somewhere here.
Yeah, I
And
mean,
I didn't experience that. Like, I was sore and I was tired and I was finding it hard, but it didn't feel insurmountable. And I wonder if that's because, I had practiced my fueling so spectacularly.
I think that is probably the marathon where I took on the most fuel. And it is the one where I didn't hit the wall. Whereas all of the, like, our pace slowed slightly towards the end, but not really by that much, and whereas if you look at all of my other marathons, it's like steady pace, and then the last 10Ks, it really drops off, because
Yeah,
I
it's
have,
interesting, isn't it?
where in Melbourne, I felt like the pace, I didn't really feel like I'd hit the wall so much as that I'd probably gone out a little bit too quickly in the first half of it. And so I was still able to kind of like truck along at, a relatively steady pace for me, just not as fast as the first part had been. And that was also one where I had managed to take on a fairly decent amount of fuel. So I just think particularly with something that is a marathon distance, you have to be put a lot more time and energy into making sure that you get enough, because it's always going to be a tough thing to finish a marathon, but it's a lot, I think it's a lot nicer of an experience if you can be crossing the line feeling like you're still running rather than having it feel more like a crawl if you've hit the wall.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to fueling for those kind of distances, I remember someone saying to me when we were training for Sydney, oh, do you have protein on your runs? And I was like, no. So do you want to speak about why that's maybe not the best choice for long runs?
Basically, it is just, it's all to do with with your stomach. It's not, your body is, the quickest way for your body to create energy is with carbohydrates. Protein is just gonna essentially sit at the bottom of your stomach like a big brick, and it's much more likely to lead to GI distress. So that's why I wouldn't not normally have anything sort of. I mean, sometimes I know people who, it is a personal thing. And I know people who will have like a protein shake for a run and they find that really good, whereas I probably would not find it great for me. And everything in terms of run fueling is about, it's about carbohydrates. It's just because that is the quickest way for your body to convert food into energy that you can use pretty much immediately. And so even with, like when you're having like jelly beans, for example, if you kind of like chew on them and have them sort of like sit at the back, and it kind of like gets into your system quicker than rather than doing it through the digestion process.
Yeah, so I guess it just always comes back to the thing that there are no hard and fast rules. Like what works for one person may
No,
not work for
and
someone else.
I think that there's a lot of stuff too about fat adaptation, which is great. And certainly I would consider myself as relatively fat adapted in that I could very easily go for a 30K run on just water and I'd be fine. But it's not gonna it's you're still gonna need carbohydrates. That's great as a base level that your body is able to be kind of like doing that in the background, but you're still going to need plenty of carbohydrates.
And I think something else that people maybe don't always factor in is particularly in training when you are doing, say 30K plus runs, the fueling's important because you then need to still come home and live your life. Like you don't get to do your run and then sleep for 2 days, unfortunately. So you need to do things that are going to support you in getting through the rest of your day as well.
Yeah, and so I think too, part of it is experimenting with things on the run. I mean, basically, sort of my rule for things is if something's under an hour, I don't tend to need any fuel. Like, obviously, I'm still eating breakfast and lunch and all of that sort of stuff. So, if I go for a run in the morning and it is under an hour, that would just be either nothing or coffee, and then I would eat when I get back. If it's over an hour, then I would probably be taking stuff with me. I've been using, if it's a longer run, I have been using Tailwind, which is a powder that I can add to the water in my hydration pack, and I found that really good for me because I don't like eating, so being able to take on fuel in liquid form is good, but the downside of that is that if I'm going to enter an actual race, if they've got water stations, I'm not taking the pack with me. like I'm not going to be carrying an extra 1 to 2 kilos for a race. So in that situation, I would either need to take sort of little sachets of it and like add it into cups of water as I went, or try something different. So I haven't really sort of worked out as yet what I'm going to be doing on the Gold Coast, but I'll have to get on that because that's in 3 weeks' time.
It's not far away. I think the other thing you mentioned there that's really important to talk about is eating afterwards, and especially for some of our newer runners, this is another thing that's come up a few times. What's a good thing to eat after a run, and do I need to eat after a run, and things like that. And something that I've been talking about with some of the girls in my MindFit group is how if you don't prioritize having something after a run, it can lead to making less nutritionally sound choices later on when you're starving.
Oh yes, like
Yeah, so
gosh,
replenishing yourself is important.
yeah, I mean, having a you want to be aiming for a serve of carbohydrates when you get back with probably a little bit of protein as well. You want to replenish the glycogen stores in your muscles as soon as possible because that's going to make a huge difference to your recovery. So eating soon afterwards is the difference between you having a good run and then waking up the next day and feeling refreshed and recovered and waking up the next day and you're still hungry.
And I used to get back from runs and think, oh no, I don't want to eat. I'm not hungry for the longest time when I started running. And it costs me long term for exactly that reason. Like I was tired and not recovering. And these days, like you just, it's one of those things you can train yourself into. Like if I go for a run, I come home, I have an apple and a protein bar. It's non-negotiable. And because I've been doing it for so long, when I get home for a run, I am hungry for that now because that's what my body expects
And
and it benefits me.
it keeps your metabolism operating. The risk with running training, particularly as something that is not a muscle development thing like weight training is that if you aren't eating enough and you are just doing running training, then your base metabolic rate just gets lower and lower and lower and lower, which is why it is then why sometimes people might go, like, say, if they're on a diet and they're doing, quote, cardio, which I hate when people refer to running as cardio, but anyway, to burn calories, what happens is their metabolism ends up being in the toilet, and they have, in order to continue to lose weight, they'd have to eat practically nothing because their metabolism is completely bottomed out. So,
Vicious cycle.
yes, and so you are much, much better off to keeping your metabolism nice and high by eating before, eating afterwards, and you can just dispense with the myth that is this calories in, calories out bastardry that is going on. And I consistently see, people, on various different, things in social media saying, oh, it's all just calories in, calories out. That is the most damaging thing
That's what
anyone
keeps
could
the
ever
diet industry in
say
business, isn't it?
to anyone, because it's total bollocks. It does depend on your metabolic rate. It's like saying, well, then if that's the case, if I eat, well, probably what I would probably eat on a normal day, it would probably end up adding to about 2,500 calories on a training day, I guess. So that's saying that if I had, that's be like probably a whole mud cake would be 2,500 calories, maybe. I don't know. It's been a while since I've calorie counted, but let's just assume that that's true. That's then saying that as far as my body is concerned, it can't tell the difference between me eating an entire mud cake for the day and me eating, having two green smoothies, a stir fry, some apple and some tahini, and some bean burritos in the evening. Now, when you say it like that, it's insane. Like, no one would think that that my body is going to respond to those 2 days in exactly the same way because they're the same amount of calories.
Yeah,
So,
and the calorie restriction model, it doesn't work for athletes. It does not work for athletes. You cannot run a car without fuel. You cannot run your body without food.
and what's going to happen if I eat the mud cake is that I am still going to be craving lots and lots of food because my body hasn't got the nutrients that it needs. So it's then going to say, hey, I still need food because I haven't had anything that's actually giving me what I need to function. So then I'm going to have to go out and eat more. And if you are depleted, your body is going to go, right, we need as many carbohydrates in the least amount of time as possible, which is why you go straight for the sugar aisle or the chocolate, because it is literally your body saying, you've gotten me to the point of starvation where I will accept any carb as long as it gets inside me as soon as possible. And that is so what you will find is if you are consistently eating throughout the day, you are going to have a lot less of those cravings because your body is receiving nutrients. And so the problem with the kind of the calorie deprivation thing is that often by if I restricted myself, I don't even know how I would restrict myself to 1200 calories, but assume somebody offered me a lot of money on one day to restrict myself to 1200 calories. Then what is going to happen is there's going to be all sorts of nutrients in that day that I am unable to squeeze into 1200 calories, and my body is going to start screaming out for those, and I am then going to make some poor food choices, and also it's going to flow over. So
It's not going to be running. It's not going to feel like running.
no, I am going to be really depleted the next day, and I'm still going to be having massive cravings. And there's all of these they did these studies on people who, that's highly unethical now, they did them on prisoners of war about severe calorie restriction and what happened afterwards. And basically, it's no surprise to anyone, all of the people ate exactly the amount of calories, which was a huge amount, like probably like 10,000 a day or something, after they came off calorie restriction, so their body could return them to what they were before. Like, there's a biological
Point.
imperative that says that restricting calories is a really bad idea, and that you will pay for it if you do.
Yeah. And our bodies are wise. Like, they do have a point that they like to operate at. Whether that point is where we would like it to be based on the current cultural aesthetic is irrelevant. Your body likes to be where it wants to be. Like, I sometimes used to think I would like to be around 60 kilos, which at my height is not, is very lean. And I have been that weight before, and I've been closer to 70 before, but my body likes being 65, and it doesn't matter what I do, I always end up back at 65. One way or another, that's where I end up. So, the sooner I made peace with the fact that that's where my body wanted to be and started, because 65 kilos on me can look lots of different ways depending on how I'm taking care of myself.
Yeah, and I mean, I did quite a while ago now, but I did a body scan, which I was mainly interested in because I have the minor scoliosis and one leg's shorter than the other, and I was interested to see if my muscle mass was actually equal on both sides, because my theory was that it wasn't, but it was actually equal, which I thought was fascinating because I am definitely weaker on one side, so the muscle is all there, it's just not doing anything. But part of that was they looked at things like my bone mineralization, which was really good, so that was really pleasing because my mum does have some osteoarthritis and stuff like that, so she's always very interested in making sure that my bones are good. And they also did, like your muscle percentage and your fat percentage, and they looked at it and they said, look, if you were going to do one thing, the fat percentage is a little bit high, and but all you need to do is build muscle, which I really liked because I thought that is
Great
a
advice.
much, much better way of operating, because once the muscle goes up, then the fat ratio automatically goes down without it becoming about a fat loss thing. And building muscle is something that is then about, well, if you want to build muscle, then all of a sudden you've got to eat more, and I like eating more.
Yeah, and look, I don't think we're being coy about this in any way. Like, we're not pretending that it's not important to a lot of women that they lose fat or they look a particular way, and that's fine. People are entitled to look how they want to look. That, and I don't think for a minute either of us could pretend that we haven't done that too, because of course
No.
we've had periods where we want to look a particular way. I guess what we want to say is be kind to yourself in the process.
Yeah, and it's a lot easier to do it in terms of if, a lot of people get scared of building muscle because they think that they're going to look like a bodybuilder. Believe me, that's not going to happen to
Oh
you
no.
because that it takes so much work. That's not going to happen accidentally. But the easiest thing, if you want to lose fat, the easiest thing is to build muscle because then it boosts your metabolism and you are burning more energy all the time by virtue of using those muscles. So, for me, once I, if I go through a period where I go, oh, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with, like how my clothes are fitting, or, like what my weight is at the moment. My thing isn't going, okay, I'm going to stop eating now, because that's a recipe for disaster. My thing is, okay, I'm going to add in some more strict strength stuff, and I'm going to, pay a little bit more attention to my macros to make sure I'm getting enough protein to support that strength work that I'm doing, and the rest pretty much takes care of itself, and it's a lot less about restricting myself or feeling like I'm punishing myself in some way, and it's a lot more about, I like it because it's a lot more about proactively doing something rather than taking something away.
Yeah, and you know what, having done that before, and I'm so looking forward to doing it again sometime in the future, the best thing about, approaching it that way and looking at your macros and lifting and things like that is you get to feel great while you're doing it. You get to feel strong and you get to eat well and feel vibrant in your body. Whereas when you're restricting calories and not doing much else, you do not feel vibrant.
No,
That's the
no.
opposite of how you feel.
So yeah. So I think that
Well off
there.
topic now.
Yes, but that's to be expected, really.
Well, it's us.
So yeah, I mean, I think that it is really important to not treat fueling on runs or for your other workout sessions as an optional thing, because it bleeds into so many other aspects of your life. And in the times when, because of, picking up kids or whatever, I haven't had a chance to eat anything. Like, I'll go into the supermarket to do the shopping and I'm like, oh, look at all of those chips and all of that chocolate that magically made its way into my trolley. And that's because my brain is literally saying, we need carbs as quickly as possible because you haven't done your job. Whereas the other day, like, I knew, like, I had gone to CrossFit, and then I'd taken the kids to school, and then I had to stick around to do reading groups, which was completely insane that day because it was a poor substitute teacher who was used to dealing with year six children. She had a bunch of kindergartners, and it was like the most mental volunteer experience I've had in a while. And so in that, I was, by the time I'd finished that, I was so hungry, and I was meeting my husband for lunch, and I'm like, right, okay, definitely having a veggie burger at lunch. That's happening. But I knew that if I didn't do something before then I would probably start making some food choices that weren't great for my nutrition. So I went down. There's this really nice coffee shop that I like in Lismore. They do really nice coffee, and they always have these sort of seed protein balls. So I bought myself my coffee and my protein balls, had that before lunch, and then went to lunch. And then I actually felt pretty good for the rest of the day without feeling like I was running on empty.
Yeah, it's planning and being aware of yourself and things like that. All those things will just do you so much good in the long run. It's a pity it takes us so long to figure this
Yeah,
stuff out,
and
isn't it?
if you need a sort of like a quick sort of cheat in terms of, okay, I've just had a run, what is something that I can have really, really quickly afterwards? And it could be something like a banana smoothie or a chocolate milk or something like that. Just going to give you a little bit so that you can then sort of plan whatever it is that you're going to have for lunch and not be kind of running on empty with that. So that is also sort of start planning things that are going to sort of fit into what your body is going to need.
Absolutely. Good chats today. Good chats. We
So
should probably let
yeah,
people go, shouldn't we?
yes, I so I don't think that there's I mean, probably also it's good to keep in mind in the beginning, like say when you are doing what we are loosely referring to as an easy run that doesn't feel easy in the beginning, because it takes a while for you to be able to run in that kind of like comfort zone, you are actually going to be burning through your carbohydrates on those easy runs as well. So that means in the beginning, it's even more important for you to be looking at what you're eating beforehand and afterwards as well.
Yeah, and I think one of the great things about our Learn to Run program is because our women are in groups, we have those questions come up and there's a lot of support and information around that. So every step of the way, they know what's a great thing to do and what's a great choice to make. Love that.
Yeah, and because there've been so many questions about it, I've created a really basic nutrition guide, which sort of goes off, portion sizes rather than calories, and sort of goes, like have for, your first meal of the day, have a serve of carbohydrates, serve a protein, that kind of thing goes through, as well as the specifics of what to have before and after their individual sessions, depending on what the session is. So that's also pretty great for people who are just looking for a bit of guidance. Because I find with doing things with calorie counting, it can just be hard to organize with your sort of family life and when you're cooking for other people as well, where if it's more sort of about portion sizes of different types of food. I even find myself doing it with the kids now, like when I'm looking at their meal, I'm thinking, okay, have we got like carbs, have we got vegetables, have we got protein?
Yeah, I do it too. It's not a bad habit to get into, though.
No, and it just kind of like it helps me to kind of like plan, like when I'm doing their lunch boxes, it helps me to kind of look at it as an overall thing and kind of going, you know, what should I be adding in here, or what extra thing can I put in for them, or, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, a lot of their basic at the moment, they've almost rejected every vegetable other than cucumber and carrot, but, you know, we're just going with that.
Yeah. Oh, fun one. Food is always fun.
Yes, and it should be fun.
Yeah,
it shouldn't, that's the point, isn't it? You know, it shouldn't be something where you are constantly feeling like you are, you know, not enjoying your full life. Like there's times for having, you know, being aware of your nutrition and making those choices that are going to support your body, and there is time for proper cake.
Yes, and cake is good. And having said that, I need to go and eat something. I'm really hungry.
So we will be back again next week. This week is the last week that you can grab early bird rates for Learn to Run. So if that's something that you're interested in starting on the 11th of July, hop on the website at operationmove.com.au and grab that before our last day will be Sunday. And I think that's pretty much it for this week.
I think so too. Looking forward to talking to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.